And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
...2008. The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. In this episode, Padme investigates a separatist conspiracy in the Senate. It's with an old flame and Anakin is not pleased at all. There'll be Anakin's duck face of disapproval, a lovesick Jew with fancy gold tattoos, and Padme using the damsel in distress trope to beat up all the boys! We're talking about Sith Spy this week. How you doing, Chris?
Good. This is a weird one.
Which one? This one?
Yeah.
I love this episode.
I know.
I think this is one of
different episode from everything that's come before it so far.
Yeah, and I one thing I talked about, like, while Anakin's like attitude annoys me, it's really good for his descendant of Vader.
Well, what was one of my big complaints from last season was more Padme doing Padme doing, you know, being a central and important part to the action. We get it in this one.
Yeah, even though I still have issues with parts of that. Okay, I need to clarify something. Do you know what a duck face is when a person makes a duck face?
Yes,
like when they
do
selfies? Cool, because I mentioned that a lot in this. So, yeah, listeners, if you don't know what a duck face is, by the way, I talk about it a lot, and you should probably pause and Google it right fast.
Google that shit.
Duck face selfies. Because it's true, Anakin constantly throughout this episode is just like poking out his lips in disapproval.
He's not a happy camper.
He does it a few times, so I counted all the duck faces. Not even gonna lie. All right, so Cinespy. I really love this episode a lot.
Maybe I'll make a little quacking noise to accompany every duck face that you spot in this episode.
I would like that. All right. So, actually, I can send you the exact picture that I think I used in my What the Fangirl review. It should be on that blog, but I found actually a better one. I didn't realize it until this time I watched it.
If we could get a good picture of his face doing ducky face, I could maybe Photoshop him onto some girl like selfieing in the mirror.
Oh man, the one I'm thinking about is when Padme says, "I will do what I can to." She's talking about the council, and she was like, "I will do what I can to complete this mission." And Anakin goes,
"And I
will do what I can to protect her." But then, right before the screen wipe, he duck faces, like he looks after her and duck faces, just like, and like I died, like I never noticed that one, and I about lost it because it was the most duckiest duck face that has ever ducked a duck.
He's the chosen one.
He's the chosen one of duck faces. Oh, man. So, I'm going to tell you now, there's a name in this little summary thing that I know I'm going to butcher, so I'm sorry now. So.
Oh, get at it.
How would you pronounce the name H-S-U?
Sue?
It's H-S-U.
Yeah, I would do the H silent because that's so much. Yeah, I'd say Sue.
Sue? Okay.
Yeah.
So Miss Melinda HSU.
Well, it'd be just like TSU. It would still be Sue, right?
I was going to say Sue.
It's probably such a subtle difference in pronunciation in the language that we won't get it right. So we probably should just say Sue.
Miss Melinda, I apologize now. But Sith Spy is the 25th episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. And it was the first of a 5-part storyline of the Second Battle of Geonosis. It aired on October 16th, 2009. It was written by Melinda Sue. I'm sorry. Drew Z. Greenberg and Brian Larson, and directed by Stuart Lee. Some extra information about the episode. In an entry on the Star Wars blog, on a Star Wars blog, Brian Young, the editor of BrightShinyRobot.com, drew connections between the episode's story and director Alfred Hitchcock's 1946 spy thriller film Notorious. Although Captain Typho has speaking lines in the episode, neither the character nor the actor who usually voices him, James Mathis III, appeared in the casting list. Dave Filoni in the episode featurette said that the planet of Cato Nemordia is still in the Republic and the Trade Federation still has a senator in the Senate. They are a corporation neutral, quote-unquote, Filoni actually used finger quotes, that happens to sell arms to both sides of the war. The Jedi think that they are criminals, and the Jedi are right, but they can't prove it. The banking clan, the Profit Guild, and the Trade Federation all sit in the middle of the Clone Wars profiting from it.
I love the name the Profit Guild.
The Profit Guild.
The Profit Guild. Hey, what are they all about, I wonder?
They're about peace and harmony and love. They profit from love. They get flack, but business is business, so they sit in the middle of the Republic. It might be handy in the future to have all these corporations on your side when you're trying to build an empire. The voice of Clovis is Robin Atkins Downs, who is also the voice of Shem Syndulla, Hera's father from season one. And in early concepts for Senate Spy, Clovis's role was filled by Paulo, a man from Naboo mentioned by Amidala in Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones, as a love interest from her youth. This idea was abandoned early on, as she states in the film that Paulo left politics to become an artist. In addition, the show's creator felt that the relationship between Amidala and the character had to be more recent than one between her and Paulo, as the theme of Skywalker's jealousy would be better supported. God, it's been so long since I've seen episode 2. I don't even remember that. I was like, cool.
I think it was actually in a cutscene. I don't know if it was actually in the movie. I'd have to rewatch it. I don't remember if I saw it in the movie or in like one of the cutscenes from it.
I know that something I've been wanting to do, I just haven't had a chance to, is I really want to sit down and just rewatch all the movies. Because to be honest, I haven't seen any of the prequels since I was a kid. And I have seen the original trilogy since the prequels, but it's been a good hot couple years. At least 3 years since I've seen any of the original trilogy. So I kind of want to get a refresher course on those too, because it's been a while.
Sometime maybe we should do a special where we do the prequels at least.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Yeah, because you haven't watched episode one in a long time, have you? It would be very interesting.
When did episode one come out?
2000?
Was it really that late?
2001?
Yeah, let's see. What's the name of episode one? Phantom Menace? Phantom Menace.
It was 99 or 2000.
1999. So I was, let's see, it's
16
minus 1999.
17
years
ago.
I was not 17. So what's, wait, no, that's not right. So 28 minus 17.
You were 11.
I was 11.
Yeah.
I haven't seen
Prime Star Wars view first time Star Wars viewing for sure.
It was my first time seeing a Star Wars movie in a theater. So it was. So I was 11. I haven't seen episode one since I was 11. And I'm 29. I'm gonna be 29 this year. So
it'd be very interesting, yeah.
I'm just gonna be like, oh god, Jar Jar. Well, in that case, I was going to rewatch the prequels on my own, but if you want to do that, I'll wait.
Yeah, I think we should. I think it would be a lot of fun.
Idea. But I don't know if I want to wait 6 months.
Well, remember how fast the last 6 months have gone by. So
that's very true. What I was going to say is we already said we're going to watch the Christmas special at Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
Why don't we just take the whole month of December and do the first three prequels and then the Christmas special?
Okay, that sounds good to me.
Okay. Well, then I'm going to have to wait 6 months to watch it then and have 6 more months of me going, yeah, that thing
17
the
years, you can wait 6
remember.
More months.
Yeah. Cool. Well, then we'll ring in December that way. Sounds great.
Excellent.
Well, as always, and I'm sorry, listeners, this one's not as good, but we are going to have a very disappointing sexy Yoda this week.
Yeah.
A true heart should never be doubted. In bed.
I like how you try to milk it.
No, Yoda milks it in bed.
Okay, I have an issue with this one. I actually think the Yoda in bed makes it make more sense. Because, okay, a true heart never should be doubted in bed. It could be like, okay, your true love type of thing. You could interpret it that way. But a true heart should never be doubted, period. I don't know about that. A true heart doesn't mean they're right all the time. We see a lot of true-hearted people in the Star Wars movies get manipulated and sent into traps. And
true hearts could be gullible.
They could be gullible. They can be wrong.
I mean, look at
me. You can always know that the true heart means well, but. You know,
it
might be wise to doubt the true heart every once in a while.
And what defines a true heart?
Right, exactly.
I would say that the angel God gift from heaven, Ewan McGregor playing Obi-Wan Kenobi, is a true heart. Obi-Wan is definitely a good guy. He's a good character, but does that mean he has a true heart? No. Does Amidala have a true heart? Well, she's also still a politician, and while she's one of the better ones who really cares about the people and everything, she has her moments too. I mean, define true heart.
Right, that's the thing. Or, you know, you could have a true heart towards one thing and not towards another or whatever. It's a bad platitude. It's just not one of the better platitudes.
You know what?
Platitudes themselves.
I think this is the first platitude we've actually discussed.
Yeah, I know. This is the first platitude I actually had a note on it. That it's in capital letters. It's just like bad advice.
Go home,
Yoda. You're drunk.
If you want to hear what I sound like, me impersonating me drunk. Listen to last episode, or listen to episode 3 of Drunk Wonderland when it's out.
I'm trying to tie it all together.
You'll definitely hear what I sound like when I'm drunk.
Scott Gardner and I have always spoken about doing a drunk show. Maybe it might happen this if we could get him. I wish we'd had enough planning. I'd like to get him really drunk and then make him watch Man of Steel. I think that's very amusing. I asked him if he would ever do it, and he's like, "Yeah, I would do it, but I would have to be really drunk." So I remembered that.
Oh, man. So what I want to do now is when we do watch the prequels, you must remind me. I will buy a bottle of wine and I will drink and watch the prequels. You have to remind me, but I will.
It would be more fun if we were like sitting on a couch or did it like a commentary. We're both just since you're in Georgia, it's not going to happen on a couch, but we could let's kick around the idea of maybe doing it as a commentary or.
Because I know I have a thing that I can watch it on, but the only problem with this thing is it buffers a lot.
Right, and the thing that I'm worried about is it would distract from your actual enjoyment of watching the movies too. You know,
I'm fully ready to do a commentary.
Okay,
I'm fully ready to do a commentary.
Well, we'll see if we can work out the logistics. But either way, it's set in stone now that December's prequel and holiday special.
Yeah, that was. Remember, I would actually.
It's
I
not the Christmas special. Christmas is never mentioned. It's the holiday special. It's Life Day they're celebrating. That's what they have in Star Wars Land. Life Day.
Aww, way to go, life. I was about to say pro-life, but that might be controversial.
Pro-life day. That's what they've got.
Pro-life day.
Not too far, far away.
Yay. So, Act 1. Okay, listeners, I have to tell you something about these notes first before I read out these Act 1, Act 2, and Act 3 summaries. So it was really late, and I was having a pretty rough day. The day I wrote these notes is the day of the massacre shooting in Orlando. So I spent most of the day like watching the news and talking with friends. I have several friends that live in Orlando, so I really procrastinated on these notes. So when I started writing them, I was pretty tired and really exhausted. And then I got really silly. So I hit a point with these notes where I usually try to make them pretty straightforward, and I just kind of didn't give a fuck. So I'm sorry now.
All right. I'm looking forward to this. I haven't read these in advance, so now I'm really looking. You're building this up for me.
Yeah, and I was kind of trying to make myself laugh, too, because like I said, it was a very hard day when I wrote these notes. So I was also trying to make myself laugh. So here we go. Act 1. The Jedi Council believes that Senator Rush Clovis is taking part in a separatist conspiracy. They need a way to prove it and just need a spy that's not a Jedi. Also, Anakin's been away for a long time and finally getting to reunite with his wife Padme. He brought dinner.
Sorry, I'll go over here.
Hey Yoda, hold on.
Yoda will be in his bunk.
And then you just hear a tiny little shika 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 shika. Sorry.
Handy trick for masturbating Jedi. Levitate so as not to make springs make noise.
Oh, I was just saying that was the sound of his tiny penis. The shika shika. The tiny sound it makes. Shika shika. All right.
Not tiny. Look at the size of Yoda's hands.
That's true. And Clone Wars, they're fucking huge.
Yeah.
Massive.
No problem with Yoda's hands, like I told you before.
So are you saying that his little cane thing is he really doesn't eat it because he already has a third tripod?
True it is.
Anyway.
Sorry.
It's all right. It's all right.
I'm stealing all the silliness. I gotta let you get into the...
No, it's totally all right. He's brought dinner for them since he had to hitch a ride on a cargo ship since his cruiser blew up. Padme is touched when she calls his apartment home. They tease each other, especially when Padme admits that she knows how to cook. Gasp, a woman knowing how to cook. And they are the cutest at this moment and probably bow chicka wow wow all night. In the council, the Jedi knows that the Bankin clan is plotting with the bad guys. Padme originally declined spying on Clovis for them, which is why they wanted Anakin to ask her. But Obi-Wan has been paging Anakin all night long, and he's not answering because he's having sex. Anakin finally admits that he needs to report to the council, or Obi-Wan will send a clone squadron to find him. Good thing Obi-Wan was never a dad with a teenage girl, or poor Commander Cody would probably have to follow her around on all the dates. Padme is upset that their night is cut short, and Anakin says that she shouldn't be upset. Duty comes first, especially in wartime. He leaves her with a small kiss. Anakin rides, and Yoda fills him in on the plan that they want Anakin to ask Padme to spy for them. Windu explains that Clovis and Padme entered the Senate in the same year, they served on many of the same committees, and they were, quote-unquote, good friends. Anakin apparently didn't know this about his wife, and Obi-Wan raises a judging eyebrow at him. Anakin reluctantly agrees to ask Padme. Anakin catches up with the salty Padme after the Senate meeting, and she's not mad about last night at all. I mean, why would she be mad? He cuts to the chase and asks about Clovis. She doesn't want to spy on a colleague and an old friend. Besides, why does it matter that she has male friends? He takes her aside and says that he doesn't like that she might be on this mission and doesn't want her in danger. But when it is mentioned that Clovis is conspiring with the Separatists, Padme is suddenly very interested since Yoda didn't brief her on that. Anakin says that she is not allowed to go on the mission, and Padme isn't having any of that noise. Anakin even says, "I'm not gonna let you do it." Deal breaker. Padme is now in with this. You can almost hear the Mortal Kombat voice of, "Finish him!" as she gladly accepts the mission, using Anakin's line of, "Don't take it personally, honey. Duty comes first, especially in wartime." Z snaps! Anakin makes his first grumpy duck face of disapproval. Finish him.
Finally, we get our first glimpse of space takeout.
I know, right? It's really cute.
It's kind of cute, but it looks a little sort of like the food they give you when you're in the hospital, too.
It looks like an Indian box, like if it was Indian food.
Yeah, it's like Indian food in a hospital, one of those little hospital discs that has a little Millennium Falcon cut out of the end of it, you know, like that. But, I don't know. I think Padme and Anakin are both kind of being assholes in this one. Because Padme breaks one of my first relationship rules of the movies, and that's the cop's wife rule, where the cop's going, you know, getting called into work, and the wife is giving him shit.
Well, and, I mean, at the same time, you know, like,
you married a cop.
I know, and I get it, but, you know, you can... I do think people are allowed to be kind of upset, like, oh, we're having this fun time, this is a nice night, oh, now it's over.
If it's your, it sucks.
I took it as frustration, like, oh, we're finally back together and you have to leave again.
Yeah, but what is he going to do? He can't, like you said, they're going to send clone troopers after him and they're not supposed to be married. So, I mean, yeah, and logically, yeah, she should be mad at Anakin, but it's just like, but at the same time, okay, that's the wife of the cop part of it. But at the same time, this makes it even worse because it would be like as if the wife of the cop was a cop herself, because she's the same. She's a politician and she's going to have to do stuff.
I actually have talked about that because Anakin's a bit of a hypocrite, because if you go back to season one, Hostage Crisis... in Hostage Crisis, when Padme needed to go to a meeting, he was just like, but Padme, yeah. Why do you have to work? Like, he did the same thing to her.
But he did it sort of like the little, it was more like teasing, you know. It was like, come on, you can blow that stuff off. She was getting legitimately mad, and he did the, like, I sense that you're angry. It's just like... Yeah, you don't have to be a Jedi to sense that she's angry, dude.
You can see it on her face.
Right, exactly. But they're just in that situation. So, I mean, if you're going to be married and secretly and one of you is a Jedi and the other's a high power broker politician, you just got to roll with it, you know? It's sort of like your line of choices has led you there.
Yeah, I mean, I understand the frustration when that happens. I mean, I remember when, like, I was dating this guy and we were both theater majors, and there was a lot of times where we'd be working on, like, opposite shows in a semester. So, like, he would have, like, 6 nights a week busy and for about a month and a half, and then I would have 6 nights a week busy for a month and a half. So for 3 months, we only had, like, one day to see each other. Mm-hmm. So I do understand that frustration. I mean, I think everybody has that moment at some point in a relationship. That actually is not what bothered me the most about Padme. What bothered me the most about Padme is that she said, you know, to Anakin, like, why does it matter that Clovis and I were together in the past? Who your old boyfriends matters a lot in relationships. I'm questioning Padme for not telling her current husband these things. And, like, every relationship I've ever been with, I told my partner about old boyfriends and girlfriends because that shit matters.
But did you sit him down and go, like, all right, here's my list of exes and how that went? Or was it, it's just something that usually just organically comes up in conversation.
I mean, like, yeah, like when it comes up and stuff like that. But, like, that kind of shows me, like, where they are in their relationships, that they're not as close as they think they are.
Well, Padme's a little older, but Anakin's still a kid, and this is his only relationship he's ever had.
Yeah, so like
he hasn't had ups and downs and stuff. He's basically a teenager in his first, you know, he's probably a bit obsessive about it, being
but, I mean,
chosen
at the same
one too.
Like, then I feel like Padme should know that that's important. I mean, like, if they're having sex, what if, like, Clovis had, like, space chlamydia or something? She needs to tell him that so she doesn't accidentally give him space chlamydia or something. Like, you talk about past relationships. Because they also help shape you who you are. You know, like, how you interact
I could see
makes you the current person you are right now in a current relationship.
I could see Anakin being the guy who would be the kind of dick who would be like, I don't want to know. And then when he hears something, he goes, why didn't I ever hear about that? You know, but that
I could see that.
I could see him totally like being like, I don't want to know. I'm just too jealous. What do you mean you had boyfriends before me? It sounds, you know, she's had at least two, probably quite a few.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, that annoyed me more is the fact that, but at the same time, I could see that as showing how young their relationship is. Like, they haven't really had a lot. When is episode 2 in compared to this? Not very long. Like, Anakin's barely a Jedi Knight, and we're only in the first few months of the war, and he only became a knight, like, really right at the beginning of the war. So they've only really been married probably about a few months at this point. which is just my assumption, though. We don't actually have a timeline in front of us.
Yeah, well, this might be the first time they don't really fight in this. It's a squabble.
Yeah, they're more just irritated at each other.
Yeah, but they're Padme is definitely uses not only as an opportunity to further intelligence for their cause, but to also tweak Anakin and give him a little taste of, you know, her responsibility and that, you know, I do what I want.
Girl.
So she does. Obi-Wan knows. That one look, I was just like, oh yeah, Obi-Wan already knows. He's just not saying anything to anybody. He's keeping it under his hat.
I think so too. I really do too. I kind of like how Obi-Wan was like, I've been calling Anakin, where should he be? And I'm like, you know exactly where he is.
No. You gotta help me with this. This, my old addled brain is not remembering the proper term for this. When you get somebody to do something by telling them not to do it, what is that called?
I was about to say being a woman. Sorry.
Well, yeah.
Reverse psychology?
Reverse psychology. Thank you. It's been driving me nuts since last night when I saw it. I wrote, my note is Anakin pulling a switcheroonie on Padme, but he's doing it's almost like he's doing a little reverse psychology and it backfires on him where, you know, he is sent to get her to do it and he doesn't want her to do it, but he is sent to, that is his mission. And if he's trying not to get her not to do it, then, you know, he just totally, it could be both ways. He could be just totally goofy about it and screwed it up and,
I think Anakin's just being a dick.
But he could have been really smart about it and knew that if he was being kind of a dick that she would do it, which would be mighty manipulative, which would lend towards the toxic relationship part where, you know, Anakin manipulates her a little bit.
Though I have to say, like, talking about toxic relationships, because I do like the fact that, you know, we always see that Anakin gets upset, so it is kind of nice to see Padme get frustrated as well. Because this is the first time we really see them as a real couple, especially in the opening scene. I like this opening scene with them, because for a lot of the series, they're either fighting, or they're in Senate meetings, or they're arguing, or they're, like, breaking up and, like, getting back together, or they're being angry at each other.
This but is literally this... getting takeout food and hanging out.
Yeah, and in this scene,
Netflix
they are...
and chill.
They're a bright newlywed couple and they're enjoying time together. And it's super refreshing to actually see them happy and at peace for once. And I actually believe that they have time to like make Luke and Leia.
And that's a great thing that about having this show is it's able to show us things that you're never going to have time to include in a movie, you know?
Yeah. So like, I do like seeing them get frustrated at each other and having that opening scene because they actually are a real couple in those moments.
Mm-hmm.
The only other note I said, in this episode, where I started saying, what did I write? This is the episode where I started saying, yeah, I can see why you two ended up in death and destruction in the end and your babies grew up without you. Because Anakin is a jerk because his weakness is his possessiveness, I can't talk, especially with Padme. Because he says that she's like forbidden to do this mission, mm-hmm. but because it's dangerous. But he's seen her fight in the first battle of Geonosis, the invasion of Naboo, the Malevolence Arc. She fought droids and captured Nuke Gunray all by herself and helped stop the deadly blue waffle virus from escaping. But God forbid she talks to an old boyfriend. That's dangerous.
Yeah, well, you know, as a Jedi, he's probably, especially at his age, he's probably got to be the least mature Jedi maybe in the history of all Jediing. Except for maybe, what was that kid's name who got killed in Grievous's house?
Nadar?
Yeah.
The calamari?
Yeah, the calamari.
Whatever it is.
Who got battered and fried.
What's his race, actually? Is his race called calamari?
Yeah, he got soaked in buttermilk, battered and fried at Grievous's joint.
Grievous is just like, just great with wine.
And a nice red sauce.
What's the line? I've never seen Silence of the Lambs, but the line about the wine and the caviar and the
fava beans.
The fava beans.
Oh, you've never seen Silence of the Lambs.
I don't like horror movies, so no.
It's a psychological horror movie. It's all about Hannibal Lecter, though. Hannibal Lecter is one of the greatest. Hannibal Lecter is actually like one of the greatest anti-heroes of all time, because by the time you hit the movie Hannibal, yeah, you're kind of on his side.
Yeah.
You're kind of on his side anyway, you know, he's, yeah, it's a fantastic movie.
Yeah, it's not my cup of tea. Not at all. Give me my Little Ponies. Ponies. But that's all I had for Act One. Do you have anything else?
You ought to talk to your friends who make the tea and have them make a Hannibal Lecter tea called... That's how you have to drink it, really hot, to where you just could go...
I know that my friend Kara has Hannibal tea from the TV show. Yeah, I do notice that she has that, so...
Mm.
Anyway,
That tastes like... All right.
Did you have anything else for Act One?
No, I'm ready to move on to Act Two.
Alrighty, then.
As soon as we start talking about cannibalism, that usually is a good sign to move on.
Well, we were talking about eating calamaris.
Yeah, eating calamari, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't matter what we're talking about. Blah, 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 cannibalism. All right, part two. Well, got to remember that from now on. As soon as it hits cannibalism, I was going to say calamari.
It's our tilapia.
Exactly.
In our store...
Little gabagoo.
Well, no, in our store, all the girls have a code word, which is if someone comes in and it's like someone's like creeping us out or making us feel comfortable, we mention tilapia to another girl, which is like, hey, are you going to pick up tilapia tonight for dinner? And that's our code word of, hey, this person's making me uncomfortable, can we switch? So it's apparently cannibalism is now our tilapia.
It's a safe word.
Cannibalism, no!
Yoda has over 17 safe words.
Act two. All right, where am I? There I am. At the Jedi Council, Padme tells the Jedi that she'll need to get back in contact with Clovis since they haven't talked in years. They used to date, but she ended it wanting to return to being professional only. Clovis didn't take it all too well. She says she will do whatever it has to succeed in her mission. Anakin adds that he will do whatever he has to protect her, and then he makes his second death face of disapproval. That's the one I was talking about earlier. Padme goes out to dinner with Clovis that night. It's gotta be noted that as the opening of the scene pans, C-3PO is chatting with a really pretty lady droid, so you go, C-3PO, two for you. Clovis is surprised that she reached out to him. He's going on a work trip to Cato Nemordia to make the Nemordians pay back some of their debts to his planet of Scipio and the banking clan. Padme admits that she can never make progress with them either. Clovis invites her to come with him. She teases if he is inviting her for political reasons or to rekindle their old friendship. He wants both, but he wants all the friendship. Wink, wink, nudge, mudge. Friendship is magic. The next day, as they're leaving, Anakin is disguised as their pilot and makes his third duck face of disapproval as Clovis kisses Padme's cheek. He even breaks a chair restraint so Clovis and Padme can't sit together. Arriving at Cato Nemordia, Nemordian Senator Lot-Dod, I told you, I wrote these really late. Nemordian Senator Lot-Dod is surprised by Padme's unexpected arrival, but still welcomes her. His servant shows her to her room while Clovis and Dodd have business to discuss. Padme decides that she needs a bit of fresh air to walk around and scope out the place. The business is a new droid factory being created on Geonosis that's going to profit both the Banking Clan and the Trade Federation as they study a hologram of its progress. Lord Poggle the Lesser from Geonosis enters wanting more of the profits, and Clovis doesn't want to change the deal. But Padme strolls in going, I was so lonely by myself without a man because I'm a weak lady and everything and I'm delicate. I was looking for you, Buttercup Faces. And they leave. And Dodd and Poggle realize that Padme is a weakness for Clovis. They can use her to change the deal, and they plan to poison Padme. When she comes to dinner, Dodd offers Padme a drink in toast of their new friendship. He wipes the glass with poison, and she drinks it right down.
Yeah, that wasn't highly suspicious at all.
He drinks it and then just goes 1 second and wipes his thumb across.
Yeah,
Here you go.
That seems like a real respectful gesture. And then it's just her. She's the only one that's drinking it, and she's got to drink it with him. It's just so suspicious.
The only thing is that if it was, it could be like, oh, let me wipe my spit off this for you.
Yeah, exactly.
God, yeah. Okay, so I, you need to cue up the Angry Hulk music. Are you ready?
Yes. Are you?
Yes, 9 weeks from now when I edit this. I know I've talked about my love of Project Runway a lot on this show. So I can honestly say that Padme's dinner dress pisses me the fuck off. There is no logical way that that freaking dress is not falling off her body in a Janet Jackson Super Bowl wardrobe malfunction without having it taped to her fucking boobs.
They've got that's what I was going to say. They have to have space tape.
There's no back.
Strong.
There's no shoulders. There's the stuck to her breast. Like yeah, does she have Velcro boobies
space
or something?
Color forms or something. They just like glue them onto your flesh or something. Yeah,
like,
it was ridiculous.
How? Like I can hear Isaac Mizrahi on Project Runway just going, "Oh my god." Where her breasts are just going to be everywhere, and it's going to keep falling off, and we're going to see all the vaginas. Like, that's a dress makes me so angry. Every time I see it, I'm just like, I need Nina Garcia and Tim Gunn with me and to channel my inner Heidi. Inner Heidi, okay, don't be mad, it's a cartoon. But no, her dress makes me so angry every time I see it. Like, what is the logical of the dress? And there's no real woman would ever be able to wear that dress because it's... Ugh. Men designed that dress. I can't.
Men designed her body model.
She
has
like, yeah.
Show.
She also has like pointy, like 1990s Laura Croft boobs.
Yeah.
Like she doesn't have nice, like, you know, subtle female round breasts. What breasts are round? She has pointy boobs. Like it's like the 1990s, and I'm playing
kind of the opposite
again.
In the movies. In the movies, she just has like normal sized breasts for a woman her size. You know.
Yeah, they're super small on Padme, too. Her breasts are, like, super... She's very flat-chested compared to her movie counterpart. She has very small breasts. And they're pointy.
And they're pointed,
like,
yes.
Like tiny, like, Coors mountains on, like, beer cans. What'd you think of that, too, Chris?
Huh. I love the name Scipio.
Scipio!
Scipio!
Hey, Scipio!
It reminds
Did
me of this BBC show. There used to be this BBC show called Up Pompeii. And it was set in the times of Pompeii, and it was all double entendre humor, and it was all told from the point of view of a servant in a rich household, and his name was Lacio, and everybody was always yelling Lacio, and that's what I thought every time I heard him say Scipio.
Was it a play on another funny thing happened on the way to the forum?
It was very much like a funny thing happened on the way to the forum, but I think there were. Like movies in Britain with the same actors called Up the, you know, whatever. And I think it was sort of based off those, but it was very much that sort of idea, you know, just sort of, it was a bit raunchier than a funny thing happened on the way to the forum. But yeah, Senator Stocky from Scipio. He's definitely, he's the 80s douchebag rich boyfriend that's going to get the girl stolen away from her at the end, of the, you know, by John Cusack or whatever in 1984. He's just got that pretty boy look, and he's not overly douchey in this, actually. He's kind of more just like a lovesick puppy when it comes to her.
Yeah, that's actually something I do kind of like about Clovis. Like, he's... I mean, Anakin says, like, oh, it's nice that you have a heart. But, I mean, like, he's not... I don't see Clovis as a bad guy, per se. I see him as a businessman. I mean, I think if the Jedi... Or not even the Jedi. I think if the Republic came to him and was like, hey, can you build us, like, a clone factory here? He'd be like, yeah, totally, sure. What's your, just pay me.
Yeah, not evil, but, like, just majorly... Oh, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, he had some major faults about weaknesses, you know, and ethics is not one of his strong points.
Yeah.
But probably when it comes to Padme, it would be.
Yeah, and we see that.
She's in just, like, creepy hell. She's got the Nemoidian, you know, having her drink from the creepy cup and Senator Stocky on the other side. And Anakin being stocky, too. And then stocky boy, she's just surrounded by, like, creeps and stalkers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
On, actually, one of the worst. That city, okay, it's a neat-looking city that sort of hangs like a hammock like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be one of the tactically and practically worst ideas in the world.
I was reading about the world, and Kino and Moria, the reason they have to hang their cities like that, because the gas underneath it is poisonous.
Oh, okay, because it just seems like the first thing you would do is just shoot down each end of that city and watch it tumble into the ground, a whole city.
Yeah.
You could take out a whole city at a time from two little points. Actually, you only have to shoot out one of them, and it'll just swing down, and everybody in the city will die. So it just seems like, what happens if it gets really windy? It's a whole city rocking back and forth.
Earthquakes. They just get earthquakes. My thing about Clovis is he actually reminds me a lot of Captain Argaius from Cloak of Darkness and Agent Callus from Rebels. Because, like, the moment's like, oh my, like, Dirk's K, oh my, this guy has a really smooth cupcake icing silky voice, so he's gotta be a bad guy.
And he's got some serious hair working on him, too. Like,
he has gold tattoos on his freaking forehead.
Yes.
So, yeah. The only other note I had from this part is, I love that everything Padme does to get Anakin, to get Clovis to work for her. She's channeling her, like, inner Fifth Harmony, and she's practically singing, but you gotta work, 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 because, like, Clovis is doing all the work for her. And what I love about it is she's playing with the whole trope of the damsel in distress, like, oh, I'm so lonely. Only a man can be my savior and begin to help me because I'm just so delicate because I have a vagina.
Here's this about that, though. Wouldn't he know her better than that, especially if he was so in love with her? Would he be like, that's not the Padme I know. She was kicking everybody. I mean, I'm assuming that there wasn't a point where she was like, you know, maybe she was back in her college days or whatever, but I get that.
She's kind of acting like a little bit of a teenager here, though.
Yeah.
Like, teehee, you're like a big bad, like, Edward vampire to my love.
Yeah, because I just don't see that being part of her personality, you know, ever. Maybe, you know, maybe as a little kid or something, but.
Maybe,
so,
like,
I don't know why he's just so blinded and happy that she's talking to him again that he's.
I was about to say the exact same thing. I think he's just really blinded, and she's playing it to her advantage. But even then, like, I feel like we know that Kid and Amodia, they have a senator. Like, La Dot is the senator in the Senate. Like, he knows her too.
Well, I like they didn't play it like they usually do in these stupid things where. Not that this is a stupid thing, but when they usually do it stupidly in these sort of love triangle where, you know, you got to pretend you're seducing someone and you have to do weird little excuses not to, like, let the person touch you or kiss you or say, or, you know, say anything leading. And they're always doing little dodges and stuff that are awkward. And I like that they avoided that because I always hate that when that happens in a
I just thought of story. The version of Freaky Friday with, oh, what's her name? Her name was just on my head.
The original
redhead
one?
Redhead and Mean Girls. What is her name?
Oh, the new Freaky Friday. I don't know. I was going to say Jodie Foster was in the original, I think.
Mean Girls, Lindsay.
Lohan?
What's her name?
Lindsay Lohan?
Yeah, Lindsay Lohan. When they did the new Freaky Friday with Lindsay Lohan, like, and she was the mom was just... Jamie Lee Curtis was playing the mom. And she was just like, no, don't kiss me, I have a cold sore, don't kiss me on my cold sore.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so, all that stuff is always, like, it just is always so cheesy and formulaic. So I'm glad they just, and you're expecting it more in a cartoon show for kids, and they just, like, go right around that and didn't do it. I was very glad.
But you gotta work, 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 work. Make my body work, 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 work. Gonna make Clovis work, work, work.
Clovis is not having a good run in this episode.
Make Anakin pissed. Archie saves the day. Okay.
As always, once again.
Actually, all Archie did was hold on to a memory chip this time, so he was good. But he was supposed to leave if they needed him to. I didn't have anything else for Act 2, did you?
No.
All right, so let me get some of my water before I read. Water. All right, so Act 3. After dinner, Padme starts to feel woozy, but she brushes it off. She tours the palace with Clovis, which makes Anakin angry when he finds out. They head into the library, and Padme feels really thirsty. Clovis leaves to get her some water. Padme hurries to where she saw the hologram from her earlier. She pulls it up, but it's password protected. She uses all the easy choices like QWERTY and password 1234. Finally, when she guesses Padme, it pulls up the image of the droid factory showing proof that Clovis and the banking clan are funding it. She calls for Anakin, who is so ready for a fight! Let's get ready to rumble! She takes the hologram disc, but hides it behind her back from a returned Clovis. She throws her arms around him in a hug as Anakin enters from the shadows. She drops the disc, but Anakin catches it with a force and takes it to R2-D2 for safekeeping. Then Padme faints in Clovis's arms and he returns her to her room. Clovis knows that it's poison, and Dot is like, "What's wrong with you, man? Can't you see that she's a Republic spy? I sure can see it with my goat-shaped eyes." Clovis finds the hologram disc is gone and demands it back from Padme. He accuses her of using his feelings to get information. Even dying, Padme is like, "Sucks to be you, man." Anakin returns and freaks out that Padme is dying. He's going to negotiate with Dot himself for the antidote. Clovis knows that Dot could kill him for losing the disc, but Anakin has no more duck faces to give. Clovis cares more about Padme's life than his own, claiming to love her. But Dot catches them on the way out. They try to bluff that Naboo wants Padme, but Dot won't let them leave. Clovis holds him at gunpoint and gives the antidote to Anakin, who scurries away with his wife. Anakin tells Clovis on the hangar dock that it's good that Clovis has a heart as he leaves Clovis in the hands of Dot and Poggle. Padme apologizes for making Anakin doubt her, but he says they got the disc and everything ended up okay.
And everything's gonna end up okay.
They're gonna duck face kiss, and then they're gonna have babies, and they're gonna raise little ducklings together, and they're gonna have Anasoka there to help them raise their little ducklings. And then Grandpa Obi-Wan's gonna come over, and they're gonna be like, "Quack, quack, Uncle Obi-Wan, he's like an old goose." And he's just like, "Come around, little children, we're gonna have story time about the great times of Jedis." And then, like, this, like, gangly...
It'll be like Donald Duck with Huey and Dewey. It'll just be Huey and Dewey, though, and Obi-Wan will be Uncle Scrooge.
No, it'd be Huey and Ducky.
Huey and Ducky. Lukey and Pukey.
And then they look over, and then there's this, like, mangled up looking, like, crazy looking goose, and it's Yoda, and he's just like, "Oh, come sit on my lap, little goslings." So, what did you think about Act 3?
All right.
Oh, he took a long breath, guys. Here we go.
No, this is just weird. When they first pulled up the picture of the droid factory, something about it, like, triggered something in my mind. Like, Richard Dreyfuss, and you ever seen 2001, Close Encounters of the Third Kind? When Richard Dreyfuss is piling up his mashed potatoes at the dinner table.
I think so. God, I haven't seen it since I was a kid.
Oh, it's a masterpiece. We should do a special on it. And he's like, "This pile of mashed potatoes, it looks like something to me." That's the droid factory was my pile of mashed potatoes, just like your white whale last episode.
My white whale.
I was like, what is it about that droid factory hologram? And it's like this, like, pink purple color. And then the second time they popped it up, I realized what it was. It's just the general shape and proportions of the Disney Magic Kingdom castle in Disney, you know? And it immediately triggered that in my mind. And then when I realized it, I go, "Oh, of course, Disney." And then I'm like, "Oh, wait, no, not at this point." This is long before that.
Oh, man. I'm partially also laughing because it reminded me of a picture I saw earlier today. It was because, you know, they're building the new Star Wars park at Disney, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I'm so excited. Well, it was a picture of, like, the destroyed area because they had to tear down part of the park. And it was these two construction workers, like, standing on top of all this rubble.
Yeah, I saw that.
And it was like, man, the Alderaan part of the park looks great. Oh, it was fantastic. Oh, man. That is
Kinda... they're going to have interactive R2 units, you know, R2-style robots or, you know, astromech-y robots that just wander around and interact with people.
You know, I haven't been to Disney since I was a child, and I've been wanting to go, especially since, like, my love of Tangled. And I'm going to probably have to make a special trip
When Star Wars World happens, we got to have some sort of Two True Freaks meet-a-rama there, because it's just too, that's just the too perfect of an opportunity.
Yeah, I need to, like, because it'll also give me, my mom lives like an hour away from Orlando, so it'll give me a good reason to go see my mommy. Yeah. Go see my mom, and I have a few friends that live in Orlando, too, so. As I mentioned earlier in the episode.
Imagine you could go, your mom likes, like, science fiction-y stuff, I assume.
My mom had introduced me to Star Wars, so she would love to come to the meetup.
I think the first picture I saw of your mom, she was in a Next Generation outfit, uniform.
Yeah, she was cosplaying as a character. The only time she ever cosplayed. So my mom loves Star
Wars. Yeah, not many people. Well, I guess maybe there's a few people that have moms that dress up in,
I know so
you're
many.
Pretty lucky to have a mom that dresses up in Star Trek uniforms.
I know so many cosplaying mommies. The one that's coming to my mind right now is two of my friends, and they do a lot of Once Upon a Time cosplays, but they're also Game of Thrones fans, so they do a lot of Game of Thrones stuff too. But the reason they had their baby, their baby's well over a year old now, but when they first had this baby, it would only sleep to the Emperor's March. It would only fall asleep to that song. And then also they showed the mobile for it and had like a little Death Star with little TIE fighters flying around it.
Raising him right.
I know. So he's a really cute little... His going home outfit from the hospital was they dressed him up like Thor. And he was like in this like little Thor onesie, and they had this like little like soft like Thor winged hat on him. And he had a tiny stuffed hammer.
I was just going to say he had to have a hammer, right?
It was a tiny, it was like a knitted, like a crocheted stuffed hammer.
Right, right. A very soft hammer.
Did I actually ever tell you about, speaking of Star Wars parents, what my two of my friends, Scott and Kirsten, they have a band called the Blubbering Humdingers. They're a folky band. They're a folk band. They actually perform a lot at Dragon Con and stuff like that. So if you go to Dragon Con, you should go say hi to them. They're my friends Scott and Kirsten. What the Star Wars name they named their baby?
They named their baby. Is it a made up Star Wars name or is it like after a character?
I shouldn't say like Star Wars. This was the nerdiest named child I've ever met. And I love this name. His name was Samwise Liam.
Oh my god.
His name was Samwise after Samwise Gamgee from The Hobbit. And their favorite Star Wars character, both of them, was Qui-Gon Jinn. And they didn't want to name their baby Qui-Gon, so they named him Liam after Liam Neeson.
Well, Qui-Gon as a middle name is like almost like two middle names. What a complicated, hyphenated mess that name would be, though.
Yeah, so they named him Samwise Liam.
Well, At the meetup in New York City, which, due to all sorts of scheduling weirdness with the con, we ended up not lining it up with the con, but it was also, like, became awkward because, A, it's all guys coming, they're all middle age, and they all have kids, and it's Father's Day weekend.
Oh!
So, basically... Dr. Bill Robinson and Scott Gardner are bringing their kids. Bill Robinson's bringing his son and Scott Gardner's bringing his younger son.
You have to say hi to everybody for me.
Well, I just realized that both of those kids are named after our science fiction named kids because Dr. Bill Robinson's son is named Ben, which makes him named after Obi-Wan Kenobi and Kylo Ren now retroactively.
Yeah.
And Scott Gardner's son's name's Logan after Logan's Run. But if he wants to be cool, he could say Wolverine, too.
I think it's cool to say Logan's Run, too. One of my coworkers named his son Logan after Wolverine. And I meet, working in a comic book store, I meet a lot of kids named Logan.
There's a Logan named after Wolverine, that's the son of one of my coworkers at work.
Yeah, I meet a lot of Logans working in a comic book store.
I've got coworkers who have a pair of ferrets named Clark and Bruce. So,
do they fight a lot?
And the dog's name's Jack Napier, which is the original name of the Joker from the first Batman movie, the first Michael Keaton Batman movie.
Oh, my cats are so boring, but I didn't name them, so...
I'm glad your cat came back, by the way. I just want to say that...
She's been wandering.
You gave me a moment of horror when it's like, my cat hasn't been seen all day, and I'm like, oh, I wish I hadn't read that post. I don't want to read it. I didn't count
that
because I didn't... I'm just like, keep scrolling.
Well, then, like, 2 days later, I didn't find her until 2 a.m. Like, now that it's summertime, she's been wandering a lot more.
Yeah, they do that. Yeah.
And so, like, we stuck a pink harness on her, because she's a great cat, and we stuck a bright pink harness on her. So that way, because, like, we had two fears. One fear was that there's been this big black cat that's been roaming the neighborhood who has tried to pick fights with our cats before, and it's a stray. And so my first fear was that she got attacked by that cat, and she was hurt somewhere and couldn't come home. My other fear was that she got picked up by the pound. So what we did is we stuck this bright pink harness on her. That way, like, if someone saw her, even if they found her and thought she was a stray, they could see that she belonged to somebody.
Right.
That harness lasted about 4 days until she came home and it wasn't on her anymore.
Oh, yeah.
So she gets hung up on something anyway with that.
And so I'm taking it that you definitely, there's no way you're going to keep a collar with her name on it on her at all. That probably lasts all of like 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah, because the thing about her is that she's a long, slinky cat. And also, her fur is very slick and very soft. And so she has this like really slick fur. And so anything that went around her neck, the only way to keep it on there would be to have it really tight on her. I don't do that. So we're discussing microchipping her.
Yeah, that's usually the best option. They don't even know or care.
Yeah, I kind of want to get one of those like little microchips where it's like a GPS.
I don't know if you can do that, but that would be fun to watch to see where she went anyway. You could see what other houses she was probably begging food from.
Yeah.
I'll do that. All of them.
So what'd you think of Act 3?
I like it. My only note was the Magic Kingdom.
Yeah, I only had 2 notes for the episode and 1 note going forward. For one, Anakin is cold at the end of this episode. I mean, Clovis puts his own life at risk to save Padme, and Anakin just leaves him to maybe die. There was no thanks for saving my wife, no thanks for getting the antidote, just leaves his ass on the hangar.
Yeah, well, it was
that's
like
a little bit of Vader in him, though.
Well, there was also a little bit of like, hey, what fate is worse for him? At least he has a chance there to escape or whatever, or deal with the situation at that. Anakin could have taken him in, you know, and been like, you're coming with me in chains, and locked him up in Jedi prison or wherever they put him. Salt mines of Kessel smashed into who knows what.
But I feel like, because, you know, of course, like now retroactively, I know you haven't seen season 6, but Clovis does come back in season 6. And so, like, we know retroactively, if you've seen all of Clone Wars, that Clovis has escaped. At this point, though, we don't know that he escapes, and he even says, hey, I'm possibly going to die in this episode.
Nobody really cares much about him, and why should, you know, Amidala is just like, hey, you know, I might have felt sorry for him, but he's kind of a traitor, so...
Yeah, I do think Padme does care about him. She just doesn't like that he's in the situation. So, I mean, I think, because even then, like, as she's dying on the bed, she's like, I didn't want to believe it that you were a part of this, which is why I went on this mission. Because I do kind of think part of Padme
was... Yeah,
but
now that I know, screw you, buddy.
Yeah, because I think part of this is, like, Padme originally went to try and prove that it was wrong, but then when she saw it, she was just like, oh, well, yeah, bye, Felicia. But, like, that was a nice little touch of Vader right there that came in.
I think she was also going, what did I see in this guy in the first place anyway?
Yeah. Without judging, Anakin's not much better.
Well, it's funny. Anakin was, you know, like, bopping around into another chair, but I'm sure she was just like, thanks, dude. You know, he was protecting his ego and jealousy and stuff. At the same time, she was probably avoiding, like, unwanted smooches and having to sit next to him for the whole ride. So they still work well as a team.
You want to hear something kind of funny?
Yes, I do.
So we all know that I have a celebrity crush on Michael Socker, right?
Yes.
And with his birthday, he's a Sagittarius. And I saw this Star Wars thing, which was like, find your sign, and this is your Star Wars character. He was Anakin, and my son was Padme.
Oh.
I was just like, oh.
Meant to be, it was.
Oh. Like, if it actually works out, do I want to spend 3 years to possibly get force choked to death?
Yoda's sign is slippery when wet.
So you're a Capricorn. Sorry. Definitely not a Virgo. All right, and then my actual real note for the scene. Here's my problem with this episode. And most Padme episodes so far up to this point in the show. Up to this point, including this week, Padme is an awesome badass. She outsmarts everybody, and she gets the job done. And then there's some sort of, like, outside force where she's either captured by Zero the Hutt, she's overran with New Gunnery's droids, or she's poisoned.
Poisoned, yeah.
And then it's up to the guys, and this is Jar Jar Binks included, to save her.
Yes.
And it takes away everything that made her shine in the episode. And it's not really until later this season, but for really, really, really in season 3, that she has episodes by herself with no Jedi, where she's actually taking care of everything from start to finish with no help.
Yeah, that's exactly the way I felt about it. As soon as she was poisoned, it's like, oh, she's from here. To a certain extent, it was a little better because, hey, even when before she even knew she was poisoned, she was starting to feel it. She still went through with her job and stuff. But yeah, mm-hmm. Then at the end, it comes down to Anakin and stuff to save the day. And really, the like moral I would have liked to have seen from the whole story is that Anakin goes there to protect her and finds out that he doesn't have to protect her at all or do anything. You know, she pretty much
kept
it by herself while he sits and duck faces off to the side. and maybe even she saves his ass at the end, you know.
Yeah.
Would have been a better twist to this story. So I was hoping for it to go it didn't end very well. It ended in a very predictable manner.
You know, no, I think about it. I don't think Padme has ever saved Anakin at any point in the show. I can't think of a single occurrence where she rescues the Jedi. And I was talking about that with my buddy Angel. Like, I would love to see an episode where Satine and Padme team up and they have to rescue Obi-Wan and Anakin.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, even having, like, you know, like, Ahsoka there to help, too. Like, I can't think of any time ever where Padme ever saves Anakin, ever. And that would have been so much better to have him have that realization of, okay, I can see that you can take care of yourself.
Yeah,
you
basically know? He was just there. He ended up just being an observer there, and he gets past the information, and that's it, you know?
Yeah, so, like, that's definitely my big issue with this episode. But guess what?
What?
Dear listeners, strap in. Starting next week, the next 4 episodes with the second battle of Geonosis is my favorite chunk of season 2.
Ooh, okay.
We're getting into my favorite chunk early. Like, I love the next 4 episodes. I think they're my absolute favorite. You get clones, you get Ahsoka, we finally get Barriss Offree. Oh man, I've been talking about Barriss Offree for a very long time, and we finally get Barriss in this, and we get some great Ahsoka having PTSD moments, and we get brutal. They get brutal, like, this is actually a fucking war, and there are Geonosians blasted into body parts, with, like, and clones being taken away and, like, ripped into pieces, and zombies.
Easy,
like,
there.
Oh. Like, I love this next, actually, the last half of season 2.
It's getting your bloodlust really up.
I know, like, actually, like, the last half of season 2, I actually really don't like a lot of the episodes in the last half of season 2. A lot of them are just, like, very run-of-the-mill, like, adventure, like, you know, it's cool that we get Boba Fett and stuff, but there's, like, episodes like Ahsoka loses her lightsaber, I don't fucking care. You know, like, Plo Koon and Ahsoka team up to go after some bounty hunters, I don't fucking care. So, like, like the last half of season 2 for me is incredibly weak, and I think the first half is where its strength is. So we are definitely in, like, getting into my favorite chunk of season 2, so I'm very excited.
Excellent.
So, what were your final thoughts of the episode as a whole?
I thought it started out amazingly strong by going in and doing what Clone Wars does best, is you start watching an episode and go, this isn't anything like any of the other episodes. This is going in a completely different... This one's almost like a romantic comedy version of Clone Wars, you know, or you know, a little romantic intrigue spy story or something. And I think for the reasons we just discussed, it peters out at the end. And
Padme becomes a Bond girl.
Yeah, and it just becomes, okay, like, get Padme the antidote, and you can pretty much see how that's going to play out, you know? And it gives it the opportunity to maybe, like, defy your expectations on it, but then it doesn't. So it's just sort of, it just sort of ends, you know? And like, the end, there's no, like, they could have ended it differently and had it have a little moral about or shading on their relationship. And it does have that, but that's in the first, like, two-thirds of the story, or maybe even, like, the first half of the story, up until she gets poisoned. So I'm docking it points and giving it a 7. It could have gone as low as, like, a 6 or 6.5, but I'm keeping it at 7. Because it is, it did go in a different direction, so it kind of stands out for that reason.
I just realized that Captain Typho was in this episode, and he just sat on the ship for hours.
Yeah, just sort of hung out.
He was like, "I'm here, guys." Him and R2 had very long.
Yeah, I was just gonna say he got left behind like a droid.
Poor Captain Typho. you know, I did feature this episode on my What the Fangirl Season 2 Clone Wars recap. But it definitely has issues I have trouble overlooking. The guys still have to say Padme in the end. But that being said, I love that she uses the damsel in distress trope against a man to help complete her mission. And while I can't stand how childish Anakin acts the entire time, it is in his character. He is in character. He's never out of character at any point, and it does help progress him in his slide towards Vader. So I think that is a strong point because it does show his weaknesses himself and it does push him more towards Vader. So I also gave this episode a 7 out of 10. It was definitely, while it's not one of my favorites, I do think it's a better character episode for both Anakin and Padme.
It's definitely interesting and novel in a lot of ways. We've hit the same score on the last two episodes.
High five. Did you actually hear that?
I did. Oh, of course.
Okay, cool. Because I just hit my pop screen, and then I was like, "Oh God, it didn't make any sound at all."
No, it sure did. It went. It sounded like someone hitting their microphone with their hand. So yeah.
Okay. So to continue from last week, I pulled comments and questions from the Two True Freaks Facebook page.
Hey, this time I'm looking at them.
Yeah. Oh, we should take turns in this conversation. Do you want Aaron or Gene?
I'll do Aaron since you did all the heavy lifting, and that's the longest one.
Okay.
Last time.
So this comment came from our friends Aaron and Gene, who left us a conversation for the Gungan General episode.
And these
Aaron.
And these are Facebook comments. So if you go to Two True Freaks and find where we post the J Guys and Jedi's shows, you too, if you comment, could get read at the end of the episode.
Or you can also leave us a review on iTunes and help people find the show.
We'll read that too.
We would love to read that too.
All right. Aaron Henley writes, "I have a theory as to why Jar Jar was sent to Florum." Oh, Jesus, it's Jar Jar.
I know, right?
It's a Darth Jar Jar's theory too, so here we go. "Palpatine doesn't want the war to end. He has to keep it going to stretch the Jedi further apart and build the public's trust in him alone. If the Republic captured Dooku right away, the Separatists would fall a lot quicker, as I'm pretty sure he was the glue that kept all the self-interested guilds together, including the Prophet Guild. So Jar Jar was sent to botch the mission."
And then Gene answered with, "I just think he was sick of the idea that Jar Jar was on the same planet as he was and used the situation as an excuse."
Always. And then Aaron Henley snaps back, "That too. Also, I have no idea how this happened, but I think I've become an unofficial Jar Jar backer. I don't know how to feel about that." Nobody knows how to feel about that, man.
We'll
put together a support group where we can all talk about it.
"Hi, my name is Aaron, and I like Jar Jar." "Hi, Aaron. We all like Jar Jar, too."
"I wanted to hate him, but I don't hate him."
I don't like him anymore, guys. It's okay. No, Aaron, it's okay to like Jar Jar. People like what they like, and they dislike what they dislike, and that's cool. Oh, thanks, guys."
And at the end... we all write down our favorite things about Jar Jar, and we put them all in the Jar Jar jar, and then we read them later.
Oh, but they're all anonymous. We don't actually know who wrote what, and someone's going to write a dumb thing like, are you like Jar Jar's ears? But then, everyone stops and they goes, aw man, for liking Jar Jar, we should totally write a review for J Guys and Jedis on iTunes and rate the show.
That's what they should do.
Yes, that's how you get over your love or hatred of Jar Jar, is you write a review, because then it too can help people find the show to talk to other people about Jar Jar Binks.
Totally, completely, and wholly what they should do.
Well, Chris, where can people find you?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com, where we sit like Scrooge McDuck in his money vault, swimming in piles of podcasts. Sometimes on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, we'll have like 8 podcasts come out in a big cluster. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. Of all different varieties. It's like the insect world. There's so many different variations of podcasts that they cannot even keep up with discovering the new podcasts on Two True Freaks. And Two True Freaks is on Facebook, as we just said, so you can go there and interact. What about you, Hope? What are you up to on the internets?
You can find me at JGuysAndJedi on Twitter. I run our lovely Twitter page. And you can also... Don't we have a contest going from last week?
What was that again?
It was to draw something. Oh my god! We have a contest going! Oh shit, I meant to go back and look.
Hopefully we have a whole bunch of entries by now.
I know, right? So, oh my god, it would have been 2 or 3 episodes ago, because, yeah.
Get on that contest, you know what it is. that's how you save face.
You guys know what to do. You can also find me on Twitter at Hope Molinax, and you can read stuff that I write, like comic book reviews and Clone Wars season recaps on What the Fangirl. And if you like us, we're trying to build our Patreon, so that'd be great. We also have a What the Fangirl store with great shirts like In Every Book is a Crappy Movie. It's my favorite shirts that we have in our store. So, I've been meaning to get that shirt for myself, and I just haven't had a chance to. So check us out. What the Fangirl. Yay.
All right. So that about wraps us up for this week. Come back next week. It's going to be high energy as Hope leaps into her favorite part of season 2.
Oh, we're getting to the bloodlust. Bloodlust.
Yeah, I like it.
I think next week is the return of Waxer and Boyle from Innocence of Ryloth.
Excellent.
It's either next week's episode or the week after, but at some point they're fighting with Obi-Wan's troops. And when he was like, Waxer and Boyle, come with me, I was like, oh my god, Waxer and Boyle are back! and if I remember correctly, next week's also the episode where they throw Rex off a wall.
I wonder if Boyle has a friend named Lance.
I don't get it.
It's a medical procedure. You get your boils lanced.
Oh.
It was all the nurses that listen are laughing. All the doctors and nurses. Dr. Bill Robinson and Professor Alan Middleton are getting it.
I was about to say, my stepmom's a retired surgeon, so she'd probably get it.
She'd get that, yeah.
Oh, man. I might have to go tell her that joke right now, but come back.
All the old people might get it. It depends.
Well,
they'll get
next
that
week
one.
When we come back, we're going to throw Rexes off walls, and he's going to go screaming, and yeah, it'll be great. I actually really like next week's episode. Yay! I'm excited. All right, so until next time, duck face your way to work, 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 work. Duck face to work, 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 work. That's, I don't know what I like about that song. It's so terrible. And the music video is nothing but sexual innuendos because they're on a construction site. So the boys are just like picking up lumber, but at waist height. So it looks like a ton of wood. And they're pulling out measuring tapes and slapping it on the table at penis height. I'm just like, this song is atrocious, but I love it. It's so fucking catchy.
I'll be in my bunk.
That's a good place.
All right, we're out. If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at twotruefreaks.com to shop there.
If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of Two True Freaks.
Children, the lights are out and the party's over. It's time for me, Dr. D, to start running and say goodbye for a little while. And I know you're gonna miss me, so I'll leave you with this. You know that big ball of radiation we call the sun? Well, it'll burst you into flames if you stay in one place too long. That is if the static don't get you first. So remember, even if you're dusted, you may be gone. But out here in the desert, your shadow lives on without you. This is Dr. Death Defying, signing off.